UFC 299. This is the Kill Shot full card breakdown. We are excited. This is one of the best cards, not just of the year, but of the past few years. Although there may be some other really good cards coming up this year that compete with this. O'Malley Vera, the main event. I got Sniper and Monk here with me to break this whole thing down. DraftKings, focus, picks, plays, all that good stuff. So, guys, let's get right into this thing. You know, we're getting this done. Fights.
There's no fucking around.
It is a lot of fights on the card. We are live. And by the way, number one, if you're watching this, you're like, live? I didn't know you were going live. Well, that means you haven't smashed the notification bell. You need to hit the bell on the YouTube channel if you're going to know when we're going live. That's how you know. So hit that bell, smash it, ring it, do whatever you got to do. And let's just jump into this card. There's a lot of fights. We got to get some fades going, guys. The key to winning is the fade. And let's start at the very first fight of the night. Joanna Calderwood, or Wood, however you like, taking on Marina Moroz, with Moroz coming in as a minus 229, minus 230 favorite. Fight goes the distance. Prop is set at minus 200. And, you know, this one doesn't necessarily scream big score, but what do you think, Monk? How do you see the numbers working out on this one?
I really liked one side of this fight, and you're going to have to pick one. Are we doing the OnlyFans fade, or are we doing the retiring fighters fade? I say the retiring fighters fade is much more important. So I'm all over Marina Moroz here. She has dropped two in a row to decent opponents, Jennifer Maya, Karina Silva. But before that, she's, you know, beating up her a crackhead in Maria Agapova. She beat Myra Buena Silva. She gets submissions, I think six in her career. Joanne Wood has been subbed five times. And on top of that, I think all five, at least four of them, when she does get subbed, have happened in the very first round. So retiring fighter gets finished in the first round. Yeah, I'm loving Marina Moroz this week. I think she's going to be way overlooked. And at 9K, this is going to be a real nice sneaky play for me. So I love Moroz this week.
Sneaky is right. Sniper, what do you think of what Monk is putting out there?
First fight, first disagreement. Sorry. I even hit like Marina Moroz at 9,000. When around him, I'd rather play Macy Barber. I know she's taken on, you know, doesn't score great, but in this range, you got Pareda, Barber, Kyler Phillips, Sean O'Malley, Robert. Like, I'm not paying 9,000 for Marina Moroz. You can make the GPP game theory argument, sure. To me, I also think Moroz is a bit overrated. We saw a retiring fighter, Jamie Pickett, fight harder than he's ever fought because it was his last fight in there just last week. No thanks. Female fights typically don't score great. The submission is the path there. I'm just, there's better spots for me. And because I think Moroz is overrated in general, I'm going to have some interest on the Joanne Wood side. You don't have to slam in Joanne Wood because of the caliber of this card. There's plenty of dogs to attack. I actually think Joanne Wood is the one with some sneakier upside. And even if you want to go with a cash game punt cheap, I don't see the Moroz finish. I get it, but I think Wood is the side in this fight. I'm actually going to pick her to win straight up right off into the sunset because frankly, my whole pick comes down to I don't like Marina Moroz at all. I think she's overrated. So, and I'll go with the OnlyFans fade. They're both viable fades.
Sounds personal. Monk, I don't know if you have like 2020 past vision, but Marina did submit Joe in the first round in their first meeting back in 2015. But, you know, in order for that to happen again, the odds are not horrific, plus 220. So there's like, it's a reasonable outcome. It's a reasonable outcome. I would note that she needs to do it in like the first round in order for that to pay off the 9K price point, Monk. So if she's not doing it in the first round, and I'm looking for Moreau's first round submission, just to give an idea of the chances. Let's see here. Moroz wins in round one plus 550. So translate that to an implied probability of, let's say, 16%, 15%. Acceptable, exposure, 15%. If you think there's a higher chance of her getting that sub, Monk, I suggest grabbing the plus 550 as well on the sports book. Make a little moonya on this one. Here's my thing. If Marina's not doing that in the first round, she is not paying off 9K. She's not someone who goes for a lot of takedowns. Historically, she's averaging less than one takedown per fight. People switch it up. There's more than one fight that's going to come into play. I don't mind it as a tournament play, but I would assume the most likely outcome, the 85% outcome, is it's a striking battle. And Sniper, you might be right. They just strike. JoJo's probably live to steal a decision as well. If there's no takedowns, anything goes in a women's fight. All right, second fight of the night. Asu Almabayev taking on Carlos Vergara. Almabayev is a monster, minus 575 favorite, with Vergara coming back at plus 425. That is a big favorite, big number. Fight ends inside the distance, minus 170. So a little bit there. But let's go to the tail of the tape real quick. And just on note that Asu is a super grappler style fighter. He will go for takedowns relentlessly, and that's how he does his scoring. So Monk, I'm sure that this guy in his one UFC fight put up a lot of points per minute.
Yeah, he did put up, let's see, so far, yeah, 4.32. So usually that's a good number on this card. It's more like a mid number, but yeah, he put up some good numbers there against Osborne. Vergara has been taken down like 6-7 times in his past five fights.
Did he also get Tatsuro Tiara?
Yeah, he fought Tatsuro Tiara for sure, but he also got taken down by Daniel Cerda. So I don't know what we are supposed to think about that. He also put on his running shoes there against Lacerda as well and ran about two laps around the cage, which is always good to do your tape study on. That shit is too funny. But yeah, I don't have a huge read here. I'm going with Asu Almabayev probably by decision, but I wouldn't be surprised if he got a submission as well. Tyra subbed Vergara in like after the 9th, 10th minute, and he's been subbed twice in his career. So I'm just going to go with Asu. I'm not going to go crazy, though, because he only has one fight in the UFC. Not the best strength of schedule at all. And CJ Vergara, while he's not the best, has at least five UFC fights. So he's been in the cage for several minutes. So I'll probably be a little under on Almabayev, maybe a little bit over on Vergara, but I'm not going crazy on this one. This fight doesn't interest me as much as the other ones do on the card.
Sniper, how about you? What's your take on this one? Heavy favorite here for a guy with just the one fight.
Vergara is not a dog I'm fucking with. At all. Almabayev is the deserved favorite. I think he's better than Vergara pretty significantly. I mean, Lacerda almost picked up his lone UFC win against him, or now with two knockdowns in that fight. I don't see how Vergara wins this fight unless Almabayev banana peels. It feels like a pretty safe favorite at 9,500. Feels like somebody with some plenty of grappling upside here. The 9K range is incredibly strong this week. It's one of the reasons why I didn't like Moroz in the last fight. Almabayev feels pretty safe. I think you kind of have to get him in cash games. He's live for a big score. This is one that I'm probably going to be pretty vanilla on and just go field weight to actually a touch over on Almabayev, because everyone's going to be slamming in Sean O'Malley. We could talk about that later, who's 300 cheaper. So I think you're going to get some value on guys like Almabayev, Gamrot, and Despagny over at the top end, just because O'Malley is going to soak up a lot of ownership. So give me Almabayev. Think he's better everywhere. Not too much of a reason to get cute here.
Yeah, that's fair. Listen, the guy is a massive favorite, one of the heaviest favorites on this card. It's probably priced a little too high relative to what he's likely to do, even with some grappling upside, because of the likely decision here. So yeah, I'll have some Asu. I also always have to take a little bit of the fighter going up against the Kazakhstani. Ever since Marina Agapova gassed out that one time, I hold it against the entire nation of Kazakhstan.
I'm sure they'd be offended if you could say their country's name.
I hold it against the whole country. You sent Marina out and she lost to fuck, one of the worst fighters.
I can't wait to hear your Shavkat fade next time.
No, not him. Not him.
Oh, so every, the whole country, but not him. Okay. All
right. Not him. He's not. He's not Kazakhstan.
Listen.
Oh. If you,
okay. He is, isn't he?
He's a. He's a.
100% is.
He's from the Mongolian part of Kazakhstan. It's different. There's different parts of. He looks Mongolian. Marina Agapova. She don't look Mongolian.
Watching Geek just dig himself deeper and deeper. Just hanging out.
More of the Russian part of Kazakhstan. It's a big country. People don't know. People don't know about Kazakhstan. It's a big place. All right. Next up, we've got Robeles Despain taking on Josh Parisian in a fight that the UFC is hoping will lead to a massive, vicious first round knockout for this newcomer, Robeles Despain. You don't put Josh Parisian in a fight, guys, unless you want him to lose. That's how it's done. He's there to lose. Let's take a look at Despain here. All he's done is crush cans in the first round. Right?
Not even the first round. In the first seconds.
In the first second, he's got about like 30 seconds of tape.
It's crazy.
Except all of these guys, when you talk about cans, I mean, you're talking about like 0 and 0 5, just guys who were there to take the L. Monk, this is like if you were in the fight. How long do you think you'd last with Robert Despain? I say you because I couldn't get in there with a heavyweight, but I feel like you can get the weight up there if you needed to qualify.
Probably not as long as Josh Parisian, but that said, the first minute finish is very much in play here. Simple read. You got to get Despain in your lineup just because, I mean, like you said, 3 fights in a row, 19 seconds. The dude just puts people to sleep. But for that same reason, he only has 19 or like 4 or 5 minutes of total time. Like I said, his last 3 or 19 seconds. Meanwhile, say what you want about Parisian, how he's only beat Roque Martinez and Alan Badeau in his last 5. But what does this fight look like if by some act of God it lasts longer than 2 minutes? So what, anything could happen at that point. We've seen heavyweights come in here, not get the knockout in the first 90 seconds, and then they're completely done. So obviously I'm playing Robeles, but I'm also going to probably be, unfortunately, a little higher on Parisian than most people, just because if this goes longer than 90 seconds, I don't know how Robeles would win. I'm picking Robeles probably in the first round by KO, and you're likely going to want one of these guys in your lineup, no matter how ugly it looks on paper.
I feel like Ash isn't lasting even a minute with Robeles.
Okay, let's tone this down. Robeles isn't some scrub off the street. He has an Olympic medal in his back pocket. He's a Taekwondo bronze medalist. The dude's legit, and he's not a young heavyweight. Yeah, he's 4-0, but because of all that Olympic training, he's 35 years old, 6'7", 255. Dude's a fucking giant, and he's a problem, and he's in shape. Josh Parisian is polishing off ho-hos, and he's going to roll in the cage. Good fucking luck, buddy. Like, I get the point. We got to see Robeles do it. There could be a time to fade him. I don't think Parisian is that guy.
What I think could happen is, if there's going to be, because
Olympic medalist at heavyweight. Heavyweight's not deep. If he's like, I don't know how long it's going to take. Maybe Parisian extends him, and we go, oh, okay, I'm going to fade this guy when he faces this type of fighter. Or like, we could get some more information here, but I don't think Parisian's the guy to beat him. There are tons of dogs I am going to target. And it doesn't sound like it because I keep shitting on them, but I'm gonna shit on another one in this, the bottom range here, the 6 point whatever fighters. No thank you to any of them. There is plenty to fuck around with here, and this guy ain't making it. Robeles he's of everybody on the card. He's got the 60 second bonus upside, and he can absolutely smash the slate. Put this way. I'm going to play more Despain than I'm going to play Gamrot. I'm going to play more Despain than I am Almabayev. I'm going to play more Despain than I am going to play Sean O'Malley. But I have a take on that fight later, you guys.
Core play coming from Sniper there. And listen, it's very clear what's supposed to happen here. And what's supposed to happen is a situation where you're going to get a bonus. And if you miss the bonus, you don't get paid on a DraftKings card. It's that simple. First round finish is going to score 100 generally at the worst. And you get the bonus. You're talking about potentially 130 or more, depending on how many strikes are thrown before the man goes to sleep. I forgot to pull up the inside the distance prop, but under 1.5 rounds, minus 285, less intense than I thought it was going to be. But still a massive under 1.5
rounds. Look at the under 2.5.
Yeah, under 2.5 is minus 750. Like the chance of this really going the distance. And the thing is, even if this goes two and there's a knockdown and a finish, that's probably still going to get it done. Because this Spagna guy, he's not going to not land strike. So it's not like you're up against Derek Lewis and there's nerves to throw a strike here. There's nothing coming.
Unless he gets UFC jitters. The UFC jitters thing is a valid, like maybe he goes out, fair, can't get off, shits his pants. I mean, it could happen.
How much is he getting paid for this fight?
No idea.
The answer is probably not a lot. I bet you he makes more if he has some buddies, plays a whole bunch of money on that plus or over 2.5 rounds.
Something like that. I mean, yeah.
Some Bruce Willis Pulp Fiction type shit here.
Nothing. Yeah. Hey, listen, I won't put it past anybody. But yes, that is a fight to load up on. And the favorite is my choice as well to win by finishing round one. Next up, we got Michelle Pereira taking on Michal Olechajczyk. Now, first of all, Michelle and Michal. I had to practice that before we got in here. I don't know if you guys know.
Well done.
Pereira is minus 145. Olechajczyk is plus 123 in this one. So kind of close odds here. Over 1.5 minus 200. Ends inside the distance minus 180. Close fight. I believe Michelle is moving up in weight class for this fight. But, you know, this dude was a giant at 170. I think this is going to take place at 185. There it is. I don't know. Maybe that'll help his gas tank. But, Monk, what do you think of the numbers on these two guys? You know, Michal, generally not a guy that's great with the takedown defense. And Michelle, I'm not sure if he's going to go for a lot of takedowns, but if he does, I think he's going to win it.
Yeah, well, he looked great. He did fight at middleweight, actually, in his last fight against Petroski. He knocked him out in 1 minute. So that was surprising to some people and fantastic to see, you know, Pereira at middleweight. I love this fight, but it's all because of the Olechajczyk side. When the dude wins, he scores a million points, like constant fist, at least at middleweight. He dropped down after the Jacoby fight. Sam Alvey, I mean, that's a shit opponent, but 124, 105 against Brundage, 117 against Sheedy. Quick, early, first round finishes with humongous scores here.
But against Scrub.
Pereira also used to, you know, doesn't score the best, but Olechajczyk, when he loses, he gives up a shit, like 102.17 points on average. The dude just gives up points everywhere. And it's going to be a lot like the last fight. If this one gets out of the first round, Michal Olechajczyk is not going to look good at all. And we've seen Pereira go to decision more often than we should have, probably, but countless times. Still holds that power at 185. I think if he can get this fight, you know, like I said, past the 3-4-5 minute mark, I think his chances go up significantly. Probably could even find a finish there because Olechajczyk's going to be gassed. Hopefully Pereira, you know, watch that Caio Bahio fight, because that's how you're going to beat somebody, you know, somebody that hits hard as Michal Olechajczyk does at 185. So I'm going with Pereira here. Obviously I'm going to be playing the Olechajczyk side in GPPs, cause like I said, he's one of the best DraftKings scores on the entire card when he wins, cause it happens in the first round. But if it's not going his way, I'm liking Pereira probably to get a finish. So I love this fight for DraftKings, to be honest. Pick is Pereira, and I think he scores better than he usually does in a win.
Monk, how about, Sniper, how about you? Are you as excited about this fight on DraftKings, just scoring potential, as Monk is?
This is a good one. I don't know, as excited. I think my cheat sheet here, I got this. I have how many 5 stars did I give out? We rank all the fights in terms of playability. I gave out 3 5-star rankings. This was a 4-star. I'm just a little bit below it.
That's up there.
But I do agree this is one to get exposure to, unlike some of the last fights where I disagreed. Kind of a typical big man breakdown in that Pereira, I think, is the much better fighter, but Pereira throws big, throws heavy, with a lot of volume. I think he's live for a knockout because Pereira can be hit. And Oleg Zaytchuk has fought at 205 before, and you got Pereira coming up from 170 in his past. And they've both been at 185, but just that extra bit where, you know, Oleg Zaytchuk has power. He's got plenty of power. It's kind of the typical breakdown. Pereira's better. Oleg Zaytchuk throws big. Pereira can be hit. Mix it up. I think it's a good fight to target. I do think in this kind of mid to upper 800 range, I'm pretty confident that Pereira, just being the better fighter, even though it's a high volatility fight, I'm okay with him in cash games in this range, because this range actually isn't full a ton of cash game options, quite honestly, outside of Benoit Saint-Denis, who we'll talk about later. Outside of that, in this, you know, upper 8K range, not much going on here for cash. So I'm down with playing Pereira and just giving myself some Oleg Zaytchuk GPP exposure. But I got to side with the better fighter versus that knockout potential.
Yeah, I'm confident Pereira should get this win as well. Monk, like you said, I mean, McCall is certainly live for knockout, as anybody who weighs 185 pounds is when you're going fist to fist against another dude that size. But Pereira is just better everywhere to me. I think he's a better striker. And more importantly, he has takedowns and he can win the fight if he uses them. So I think Pereira will be able to put the stamp on some of these rounds with a takedown. Alex Jaychuk's kryptonite has been his inability to stop a takedown. So I think that's what we're going to see here. And I don't mind Pereira at his price as a DraftKings play. I'm not probably maybe as excited with him as I am about this next fight and fighter. But I like it. I like the spot, and it's certainly not a fade by any stretch. Talking about this next card, this fight has a core all-in play for me on it. That's right. I'm going to stake my enjoyment of UFC 299 on one of the biggest one of the biggest sort of disappointments that you could ever stake your card on, and that's my boy, the Hulk, Jan Kutalaba.
God bless you, man.
Going all in. That's a core play.
Going all in. Let's just clarify. Going all in on the fighter or the fight?
The fighter.
You are out of your mind, sir.
Thank you very much. Bowl calls, motherfuckers. Jan Kutalaba taking on Felipe Lins. Kutalaba, a slight minus 120 favorite. I'm letting you know right now that I already have a bet on Mr. Kutalaba as well. The fight ends inside the distance is a massive minus 550. And in fairness, Stiber, I will hedge with any lineups I don't have him in.
You just said you were going all in.
I'll be close to all in. I mean, it'll be almost all in. But, you know, I might do like a couple of points of the other dude.
All right.
Just
all
in right. case. But not much. Now, why do I like Jan here? Because Felipe Lins is not very good. That's number one. But number two, and more importantly, Kutalaba is a wrestling beast. And he's going to be in there, and he's just going to be landing takedowns. Now, you see here that the takedown defense for Lins is a, I'm going to say, well, how will I put this? It's 100%, which makes you think, oh, he's a really great takedown defender. But then you look at who he's fought, and it's really a bunch of scrubs who would never go for a takedown. So I throw that out and say, this is bullshit. You are not 100% takedown defense. And Jan Kutalaba gets two or three takedowns in the first round alone. Price picks more than boom. That's my take. Monk, you look like you're disturbed by my breakdown, but that's what it is, man. That's my boy, Jan Kutalaba, in the nuts with a win.
Yeah, that's how, you know, that's what he usually looks like when he wins. I mean, one of the best DraftKings, again, like Michael Oleksaychuk, one of the best DraftKings players on the card when he wins. It's just You know, mathematically, there's no argument there. But the problem is he has probably the worst. Well, Kevin Holland is on this card. I was going to say the worst fight IQ on the entire card. So that is something that definitely has to come into play. For that reason, I'll have more than a couple of points.
That's why I said it's risky.
Yeah, a couple of points of more than a couple of points of Lins, but not too much. After all, Lins, you know, he has 3 wins in a row. His strength of schedule is terrible. And he got KO'd by Tanner freaking Bowser. Let's not forget about that. So, yeah, I favor Kutalaba. I think at this salary, which is, I think, even cheaper than his last salary. Yeah, 80. I guess it's the same. 8,400. Yeah, if he wins, this is well over a 100-point win. You're going to want him in your lineup. And if Felipe Lins wins, that's probably a 100-point win. You're probably going to want him in your lineup because one of these guys, if this goes to decision, that would really stupefy me. So I favor Kutalaba. I'll have much more of him. But, yeah, this is basically a must-play fight.
Sniper, if Kutalaba's not winning, he's probably gassed and getting finished in the late second, early third.
Yeah, or he does something stupid and walks into a punch. Look, I should be clear. I'm picking Ivan Kutalaba. I think he wins. I think it's a great fight to target. Just like Monk said, I can't go 90% on him. I'll probably, and there's 14 fights in the card. Made me pick right now. I have not built at all. Have not looked. My knee-jerk reaction says I'm probably playing. It probably is a core play. It's probably, for me, 150, 60 to 65%. Running back like 15-ish of Lins.
That's as core as it gets. Outside of making it outlandish, I'm running this guy in 150 lineup state. So,
probably 60-ish because I love to fight. And then, yeah. I think that's fair. Just like you said, should grapple. I also have been saying, I think if you go back and listen to old podcasts, I've been saying forever, I think Felipe Lins sucks ass. I bet Tanner Bowser against him. That's how you know somebody's bad. I bet Tanner Bowser against you. And I cash that shit. So yeah, give me Ewan, just his fighting style. All bets are off, man.
I was going to say this as well. Yeah, with Lins, he looked better when he dropped the weight. But we've seen way too much of these guys when they drop down, because Lins was a heavyweight for a while. When they drop down, you know, it's really just covering up the fact that they just didn't have that much skill to begin with. Like, you should be winning more at heavier weights, not less. But again, this one comes down for me to, is that 100% takedown defense legit for Lins? And I'm saying it's not. I say no. I say nay.
It's only 4 attempts, so yeah, that's basically zero.
It's cockamames, Monk. Cockamamie. It's a bunch of malarkey. That's what Joe Biden would say.
He's been recently knocked out, Jamie Malarkey. Is that what we're talking about?
No, it's a bunch of malarkey. All right, next up. Kyler Phillips taking on Pedro Munhoz. Kyler, -200 favorite. Munhoz, +174, Wiley veteran. Over 2.5 rounds is a spectacular -300, meaning this fight is expected to go to decision. Monk, I'm really curious in terms of the metrics, because I know that Kyler Phillips comes out like a lunatic. You know, he comes out like he's just been shot out of a cannon most of his fights. But he kind of slows down a little bit. He hasn't shown that he could keep up an intense pace for 3 full rounds. What are your numbers say about Kyler Phillips? And should we vote for Pedro on this fight?
Yeah, I vote for Pedro as a cash punt for sure. I this price is so good for Pedro, especially because he doesn't get finished. And in his last 3, I'll get to your question. I'm not skipping it. Jose Aldo, 30 points in a loss. Dominic Cruz, 41 points in a loss. Chito Vera, 45. This dude scores relatively well when he for a losing fighter, meaning over like 30, 35, 40 points. So it's decent for 7,100. Kyler Phillips is interesting because his per-minute numbers say that you should play him. He scores almost 4 points a minute. That's a very good number. 2.6 is average at distance. And then 6 points a minute inside the distance is what Kyler Phillips, I keep wanting to call him Kyler Murray. Kyler Phillips scores per minute. Those are fantastic numbers. But then you look at his DraftKings points per win, and it's 87. And you're like, what the hell's going on? 97 against Cameron Else. I mean, you should be murdering Cameron Else. 73 against Song Yadong. Very good win on paper. 76 against, so just constant non-triple digit scores, like way lower scores than we should be seeing from Phillips here. Munoz is tough as hell. I, like you said, I am with the books here. I think this one goes to decision. I think Pedro could easily score 30, 40 points. And I think Kyler Wins could score 70 to 80 points. So I think he's way too expensive this week at 9,100. 9.1K is ridiculous for somebody that doesn't even average 80 points. Give me Pedro Munoz, man. I don't think he's going to win, but I think this is going to be a close fight in which, like I said, he can score well for a losing fighter at 7,100. So, yeah, that's kind of how I'm going to be playing this. I'm probably not touching much of this in GPP unless it's a little bit of Munoz.
Sniper, what do you say? Loading up on either one of these sides here.
I think Pedro Munoz is going to be the most overowned dog on the card. Everyone is going right to the Wikipedia capping and looking at the quality competition for both guys. And I get it. Realistically, though, I agree that Pedro Munoz is a good cash game punt, just based on the numbers, minus 300 to go to decision. Fine. Not really going to argue that. Think it's a fine play. In terms of GPPs, though, the only way I see Munoz ending up on the optimal lineup on a 14-fight card, we're going to see tons of finishes, is if Kyler Phillips shoots a sloppy takedown and Munoz catch one of those guillotines that we've seen him catch. Other than that, Pedro Munoz is going to have to, I think, eat volume from Phillips. Maybe he catches him with a count. But Munoz is going to counter-strike. He's going to pot shot. I don't think he's going to stand and mix it up. Do I think he's live? Sure. I think people are overrating him, though, here. And I get he's the wily veteran. I do like Kyler Phillips as a prospect. I think he's going to learn from some of those gas tank issues. I think this is a great chance for the UFC to – we're going to talk about it a few times. The UFC knows what they're doing. This is going to be a good scalp for Kyler Phillips, a guy they are trying to build. They're trying to build the Matrix. He's got a cool-ass nickname. Monk, I don't want to hear any different from that. He's got a cool-ass nickname. It just – you got to remember, and Pedro Munoz only won one of his last five fights. Granted, he was going to win the fight against Sean O'Malley, which irks the shit out of me. I was at that fight. O'Malley absolutely quit, but he was going to score dog shit doing it. I also am rooting for Kyler Phillips because I know Sean O'Malley's punk bitch ass. If he beats Chito Vera, he's just going to try and fight Pedro Munoz and try and skip Umar and Sandhagen, because he's going to want to go with the "I want this one back," and he's going to try and get a cheap title defense that way. And I really don't want to see that. Maybe that's me just looking into my MMA crystal ball. Regardless, taking that out, I think Kyler's for real. It's an interesting test here, and I just, even in a Munoz win, to reiterate, I'm not sure he gets there. Even at 7,100, this is a too big of a card for that. We're looking at 11 fights, different story. So give me Kyler, and because of that, I'm going to have a touch more Kyler. I'm probably going to have like 15 to 20% Kyler, because that's going to get me over.
Yeah, I'll be mostly fading Kyler here at that price. He needs to win early. I think Pedro's going to last multiple rounds, and Pedro's got really good takedown defense. I don't see Kyler getting multiple takedowns or controlling a massive part of this fight. And like I said, I think there's good reason why the community is on Munoz as an underdog play in terms of his ability to win this fight. I think he can win it. I think he can win it late. I think on the striking is just not that different. And it's true that the quality of opponent is massively different. Pedro Munoz is losing to top five guys. Kyler Phillips got to prove that he's a top five type of guy. Now, you know, if he beats Pedro, okay. All right. But, you know, beat someone first. You know, Kyler Phillips coming out, you know, over what's his name? You know, kind of a washed up Barcelos. I mean, he's two fights removed from losing to Halian Paiva, who's not that good either. So I'm telling you, a striking battle, this guy is not a lock button to win by any stretch. I think the line is too wide. All right. Speaking of the line being too wide, Macy Barber taking on Caitlin Chukagian. And props to Fight Odds for not kowtowing to the name change. They're like, no, we already have our database set up, and we're not changing it for you. I don't know what the fuck. I feel the same way about having to learn the pronunciation of a new name.
Sermonera.
Let me see.
Control F is super hard to push when you're a programmer.
Yeah, no, not happening. Anyway, Macy Barber, Caitlin Chukagian, Barber, slight minus 200 favorite. Fight goes the distance, minus 300. This one is... So I would say this, actually. I was thinking about this fight. I would say there's virtually no chance. I'd put it almost at zero that Caitlin could win this fight inside the distance. What is... Could she... Is there any situation where she could win this fight inside the distance?
I mean, Macy Barber once dislocated her shoulder right in the cage against Roxanne Modafari.
I'll allow outside of
a right or knee or something. She got all fucked up in there.
If they don't secure the lighting properly, something could fall from the ceiling.
I've seen a fighter like jump up and down in the ring and then like tear an Achilles or bust up their ankle too. Like I've seen
Ortega still won that fight.
Brian Ortega.
yeah, that's right. Still, well, he didn't actually get that hurt. It just looked bad. But like I did see once, I think it might have been a Caitlin Chukwugian fight where there was a kick thrown and it like the toenail scraped the eye of the opponent. And it was like an eye poke kick that ended a fight. But outside of some weird shit, I don't see any scenario.
Wasn't that a Gina Mazzani fight?
It wasn't Mazzani who threw that kick. It was a blonde. But I remember blondness. It could have been... what's her name?
No, it was... That was a... Oh God, what's her name? She fought for a title. She's in Bellator. Then she's old. Her husband died. It was BJJ. Oh God, Kat Zingano.
Could have been that. Yeah, it could have been that. Right. Kat Zingano. That sounds about right. But anyway, back to this fight. I think it's just such a simple fight of if this is striking 50-50. And if Barbara goes for takedowns, then she'll probably be able to win rounds that way. So that's how I see it. I see it scoring poorly, probably, although I'll give Macy Barber a chance if she goes for that early takedown and get some ground and pound in of like surprising the world. But Monk, how do you see it going down?
Yeah, this is likely a big fade here. I think Caitlin, and I do respect name changes, Sarah Minara, I think she holds the record for most UFC wins without a finish. And I think it's like 12 or 13. It's something outrageously high. So we're not going to play Caitlin Chukwugian. She's in fact the worst minute by minute score on the entire card. She's the worst DraftKings points per win number at 69.1. Just completely awful. Awful. Barber is 5-0 in her last five. She has been taken down in all five of those fights. She's not going to have to worry about that in this one. She'll basically be able to do whatever she wants because Sermonara's turned into a counterpuncher for the most part. Also, and I mean this with all best intentions. The things that Caitlin Sermonara has been saying publicly lately give me concern for her mental well-being, not overall, but just going into a fight.
She's had a fuck all of a year.
It's been a long time off. Insane year for her. I'm not going to get into the details here.
I don't know. It can be
quite triggering, so you guys can, do that on your own. But she's been through hell. I'm not her biggest fan, but it'd be, I'm not Macy Barber's biggest fan either. So it'd be okay. It'd be nice to see Caitlin get a win, but I think this is Barber decision. I don't think either side scores well. And I'll probably be fading this one. If you're going to make me pick one for, I don't even want this for GPP at all. So I guess Barber has a higher upside. Barber has the higher upside historically.
I want a little bit of Barber, and I'll give the really PG backstory for Geek. Anybody else doesn't want to look it up. Sermonaro took some time off, wanted to have a child. Long story short, with some not fun details in there, is unable and is back to fighting, not as a mother. That's the quick version of the story. I don't think your head is right to Monk's point. Also, ring rust is a thing. Also, I don't know how live she is. The scoring system changes or that this emphasis on damage does not help her style at all. You go to a decision, she's landed nothing of significance. The volume used to help her. If the judges are judging damage more now, what damage to Macy's eardrums? Although this is going to be fucking an Anna Kournikova tennis match because Barber ain't quiet either. Our boy Sun Tzu will have the Vaseline out for this fight. Plenty of sound effects if that's your thing here. Look, I'm on Barber because I think Sermonara can be finished. Actually, there's a couple just sneaky spots, and you know me in GPPs. I like to look for spots. I think people are overlooking. I think Phillips is one. I think Barber is one. And my point when I say all this is not play 60% E1 like I did earlier. You don't need that much. You get 15 to 20% of each of these. You're over the field. get a little bit of leverage and you move on. I don't think it's there for certain. And I've liked Caitlin Serminara, Caitlin Chukagian, whatever you want to call her. I'm kind of a fan. Not here, though. It's not a good spot.
Yeah. Not much more to say there. I unfriend you to Chukagian. Completely not worth bothering to play. At just the win is like a loss for a five-round fight. Like I could get more out of Chito Vera in a loss than probably what Caitlin's going to get you if she wins. So I'm not interested in that. But I like your thought process on Macy that, yeah, everybody else knows she's probably a pretty shitty play. So for that reason, there is a takedown, and she could actually get a finish in there with the takedowns. I don't think she could do it standing, but I think she could do it with the takedown. So I'm fine with that. Take a little taste of Macy. Not too much. I don't want to ruin the dish. A little sprinkle.
Please don't say a little taste of Macy again. Shut her down my spine.
Oh, stop.
Ugh.
Oh, stop. Hear me out. No, I'm just kidding.
Hear you me out.
I refuse.
Hear me out. All right. Mateusz Gamrot taking on Rafael Dos Anjos. Gamrot, a massive minus 455 favorite. Gamrot on the up and up. Gamrot, future champion. This is a big notch on his belt. If you can take out RDA, an old man. Over 2.5 rounds, minus 290. Decision potential here is high, according to the Vegas odds makers and the bettors. Man, I used to, RDA was my guy for a long time. Like, when I see RDA's name, it's like the same thing as when I see Merab's name. I'm like, oh, yeah, give me some of that. But I don't know. Gamrot's pretty freaking good. How do you see this one going down?
Yeah, I'm a big RDA fan as well. Fan of the mustache too. Hopefully we get to see that again in the octagon before he's done. But yeah, I'm gonna have to use my head and not my heart on this one, man. It's gonna be Gamrot. I think he's one of the probably better cash plays on the card. Yeah, he's pretty expensive at 9,400. But this dude is, he's a gamer, as his nickname would imply. RDA, almost, not quite. He's 39 years old. He's getting up there a little bit. Lost to Vicente Luque. Yes, that was at welterweight. This one is going to be a lightweight, which I did like to see for RDA. And then I saw who the opponent was, and I was like, God damn it. Yeah, Gamrot's the guy that beat Sarukian, five-round decision, scored 106 points. His last two wins haven't scored the best, 85 about on average between Turner and Fiziev. But man, when RDA loses, where did he go? He gives up on average 104 points per loss, 104.77. And at this weight class, he's not scoring nearly as well, at least lately in his last five, as he has over his career. Obviously, he's slowing down a bit, so I'm gonna have to go with Gamrot. I'm picking him outright to win. I wouldn't be betting this fight. I think it goes to decision. I think Gamrot wins the decision, so there's not really any lines that are jumping out to me. But I think he's a damn good cash play this week, hoping that he pays off that salary of 94. That's my only question, if Dos Anjos can generally be a tough out. So he did give up 133 to Luque in a five-round fight. And he gave up only 76 to Fiziev. So if Gamrot can do more than Fiziev in there, I think he's got an okay chance of paying off the salary in cash. For GPPs, I'd be much more reticent to just throw Gamrot in willy-nilly. I think there's better spots out there, higher ceilings. And then I'd probably play a little RDA in GPPs as well. Just a little bit for old time's sake.
Not me. Go ahead and pass an RDA. And it says, I told you, sitting on the shitting on this whole 6K range. And this is the one that hurts my heart a little bit. But again, there's other guys, other fighters I want to fuck with. I promise a few who I think I'm the mid range is where a lot of the action is this week. It just is. The mid range is loaded. Plus, you got two five rounders to look at. It's you don't need to go here. And I'm down on this fight overall because I got Asu and Despagne over Gamrot. Probably, I think they both have probably both have better upside, quite honestly. Despanya can run through. Asu can wrestle fuck. Gamrot's going to win. He probably wrestles. He probably mixes it up. It's probably a good, competitive, fun, high level MMA fight that Gamrot wins a decision on. I'll mix in some more Gamrot than... I'll mix in Gamrot because at any point the RDA chin is going to fall apart and things are going to get super sad. And that's when, like, please don't go all Tony Ferguson on us, please. Let's not get there. So I'm all about Gamrot. Another good scalp for a rising star for the UFC. And that's the play for this one.
Listen, RDA, 56% takedown defense. He's good on the ground when he's there. He's a good grappler in his own regard. He's not lost. I don't think Gamrot's going to be taking him down a ton. Quite honestly, I think he's just going to stand in there and strike because he can, and he'll probably just prefer doing that against RDA. I don't see RDA getting many takedowns here. Could get one along the way. I think RDA could win the fight if things get a little weird. Could steal a round. Could sneak one in there. I mean, I watched Guram Kutalatse beat this guy when he was the hyped prospect was Gamrot. So, you know.
Guram!
Remember Guram? Listen, I like RDA. He's good as an underdog. He's like Neil Magny. Comes in as an underdog, you doubt him, and he pulls out the win. But in this case, Mateus is beyond the level of, he's beyond the prospect point. At this point, he's somebody who's very, very good. So I don't think I'm paying up for Gamrot. He's too expensive. We already mentioned multiple other expensive payup options that look stronger, and we haven't even gotten to them all. There are other ones coming up. So I think there's other ways to go. All right. Now, next up, this fight has, you want to own a lot of it, potential. Curtis Blaydes, Jelton Almeida. Pick 'em fight.
Load up.
Load him up. Blaydes, wrestler, monster scores. Jelton, BJJ specialist, also monster scores. Monk, your computer's lit on fire. Smoke's coming out of it. When you're doing the numbers for this one, like, holy shit. This guy got 11 takedowns in one fight. And then you're like, wait a second. Jelton Jr., he's a fucking badass. Now, there is some weirdness going on here, of course. I don't know who's, like, are we trying to, if you're Curtis Blaydes, are you trying to grapple here? Or are you trying to keep it standing? I don't know. Monk, you're saying you're keeping it standing. Like, you think he's trying to keep it, like, I don't know. But we'll probably get a finish somewhere along the way, I would think. Over 1.5, minus 155. Ends inside the distance, minus 240.
Yeah. Outside of Tom Aspinall, and I don't think it's close, and Tom is probably... Curtis Blaydes hasn't fought anyone, at least in the past 5 fights, that is anywhere near a fraction of the athleticism that Jelton Almeida possesses. Like I said, Aspinall's probably the closest one, and that was, you know, a 30-second... or 15-second fluke there, fluke injury. But yeah, Almeida should easily be the most athletic fighter that Blaydes has probably ever fought. He's fighting dudes like Sergey, who hits hard but can't move, Chris Daukaus, who's the opposite of an athlete, and then Jair Rozenstruik, who is technically an athlete, but very slow prodding, very low volume. Yeah, Blaydes, obviously, everybody's talking about his wrestling prowess. These guys score pretty much the best on the card if you're not named Benoit Saint-Denis. Both guys score well over 5 points a minute. Inside the distance, Curtis Blaydes almost scores 7 points a minute. That's insane. Nobody gives up points. Neither of these guys give up points at all. But when Blaydes does lose, he gets caught, and he gives up on an average 103.8. So yeah, I'm playing both sides of this one. I mean, their DraftKings points per win numbers are well over 110. This is mathematically, according to DraftKings numbers anyway, the best, probably the best fight you could play as far as upside goes for both sides. I'm picking Almeida. I think, I mean, this dude was like standing up in mount against Derek Lewis. Like, he was so dominant. And speaking of Pulp Fiction and Bruce Willis, they should look into that Almeida fight going the distance, because that number was crazy. But yeah, I think Almeida has the potential to get it done. I think he can put up a huge score here. If he's able to get Blaydes down, then it could be an interesting night for Blades, but I'm really interested to see who comes out on top here. Like I said, I'm leaning Almeida, but would it surprise me if Blades came out and just put him, you know, in his place as the UFC veteran? No, it wouldn't. So I'm going to play both sides. Again, I prefer Mahaldinho here in this one.
So Geek earlier took, you know, an aggressive core play stance and a fucking wild fight. And this is the one I'm doing on it, doing it on. Give me Jaelton. Look, you take away Curtis Blades' biggest weapon. He shouldn't, if he wrestles in this fight, got a problem. Now, granted, I'm not saying he can't get on top and dominate because those wrestlers do have heavy top pressure, but it puts him in danger in a place where he's never had to be in this heavyweight division. Should give him extra pause. And I'm not sure he can do those things. Could he? I guess my point is, would it shock me? No. Do I think he's going to? Also, no. I think Jaelton will be able to sweep him, throw up arm bars, throw up triangles. Like Jaelton, remember, he's a light heavyweight fighting in heavyweight, but he's so fast and athletic and dynamic. And he's not small. He's that perfect in between size. I think he weighs in around 230 every time. Like, he's quick. Blades is going to have a hard time. And Blades, while his striking has gotten better, are you telling me Curtis Blades got to win a boxing match? No, thanks.
He probably is the better boxer.
What happened?
He's probably the better boxer compared
Blades?
To Blades? Yeah, than Almeida.
Maybe.
I'm going to give him the boxing edge.
Maybe. I don't know. The striking, I don't know. I think Almeida will be the one chasing takedowns, closing the distance, ending up in the clinch, and making Blades go, what the fuck am I doing here? Why do I, and I don't want to be. And the way I actually see it playing, this is a really in-depth prediction. I'll get back to the broad one in a second. I see them ending up in the clinch, going back and forth, Blades shooting a reactive, just, this is what I've done my whole life, takedown, and getting guillotined. And Almeida takes his neck home. That's kind of how I see it playing out.
You know, what's so crazy about this fight, Sniper, is we've just never seen Blades in a situation like this. Jaelton Almeida presents something effectively at heavyweight, or even when he was at 205, that like nobody else does at that weight level. So yeah. I don't have an example.
It's my favorite fight on the card, by the way. Favorite fight on the card. Going to be damn near all in on it. If I play 65% Almeida, I'll be higher. Like I said, on the Lens fight earlier, I'd be like 15. I'll be like 65-30. Like, an occasional lineup won't have this fight, and I'm just higher on Almeida. I will say, as much as I love Almeida, no thank you for cash games. I'm not quite there for that. This is a GPP core play.
Also, he's been 9,400, 9,500, 97, 96, and 96, and now we get this dude for AK? Yeah.
I mean, Blades has been that way too, though. I can make that argument. So, like, both of these guys, look, averaging over 5 takedowns per 3 rounds. That is a massive number that scores incredibly well every single time they get a win. And so now it's just about, again, does the jiu-jitsu... Now, normally, for me, when they're like 155-pound guys, I think I favor American wrestling skill over jiu-jitsu submission skills. I think that the American wrestling beats the jiu-jitsu because it keeps it standing. And so, you know, you have a defense against it. I don't know. I think at this level, though, I don't know. I'm not sure that...
No can defend.
Yeah, I just don't think Curtis has gone up against anything like this ever.
And he hasn't. He's only landed a takedown in one out of his past 5 fights. 3 against Rozenstruik, none against Lewis, Daukus, Aspinall, or Pavlovich.
Yep.
I'll throw the Aspinall one out, obviously. Yeah, but
I still have real issues with Blades and my max bet on him against Derek Lewis. I have hatred for him a little bit. A little bit.
That's what you get for betting against Derek Lewis, though. That's what
Yeah. I mean, I love Derek Lewis, but man, I never thought he was very good. And I've gotten burned on a lot of bets. And I love the guy. I love him personality wise. I think he's funny. He's hilarious. He's cool. It's not that good.
Knocked out Rogério de Lima in under 60 seconds and made me a boatload of money. It's a good dude. Good guy. I like him.
He's done some good things. All right. Next up, big names, man. The names are big on this card. And it keeps going. Song Yadong, Piotr Jan, Pick'em Fight. Likely to go to decision. Fight goes the distance, -230. Let me just get some inside the distance props on these guys. Look at this, man. You don't see this every day. Song Inside the Distance plus 365. Jan Inside the Distance plus 365. Tough to differentiate these guys, but man, I don't know about the scoring on this one. They're going to be cheap. You know, they're priced low, but I don't have the best feeling about big scores coming at you in this game. There's Lou Betcha. What's up, man? Good to have you.
Shout out Lou Betcha. You know,
in the watch.
From Twitter jail.
There he is. Monk.
Talking up.
I don't know about the scoring here.
Yeah, it's interesting. If we're just looking at numbers, Jan is the better per minute scorer, and it's not really close. You know, from everywhere, overall, outside, inside the distance. 107 is what he scores per win, and let's see. Song only gives up 85 when he loses. Now the stats are complete opposite for Yudong. He's only averaging 96, less than 97 per win. But when Jan loses, Jan gives up 104.3. So I really don't know what to do here. I tend to think that this one goes to decision. No one is likely going to be throwing a lot of takedowns in this fight. So a lot of striking, lots and lots of counter striking for sure. I think I like Song Yud. I just don't know, man. I can't tell. We're going to learn a lot about these guys, where Peter Jan is at right now in his career. Is he, in fact, maybe done or going downhill? Is he on the downslide? Is he going to get back into the win column with a huge win over a very good opponent at the weight class? Or is Song Yudong the real deal? Younger-ish, prospect-ish. I mean, you can't even call him a prospect anymore, but guy that's moving up the ranks here. This is going to be a damn good fight. I think I'm favoring Song Yudong, but I mean, we're talking like 52-48, nothing crazy. I think it goes to decision, and I don't think it scores the best in a 3-round fight. I mean, Peter Jan, what's he given up? Let's see, 85 to Aljo, 80, 65 to O'Malley. Gave up a shitload to Marab, but hey, that's Marab.
Now, Marab is a special,
yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's just not a ton of great scoring lately. So, yeah, give me Song by decision. But I don't like this fight really for GPPs. I think there's better options.
Sniper? I'll be stronger. I fucking hate this fight. Like, who's going to score? I also fucking hate Piotr Jan. I think he's a douchebag. it's a super close fight, but it's... ask for the best.
Why is he a even throw,
they're gonna stand up. Neither guy throws volume.
What's douchey about Piotr Jan? Piotr.
I did something illegal. I won the fight.
Everything.
Everything about the man is whatever. I've met drug dealers with more charisma than Piotr Jan.
Except that little scream he did when he gets up on stage, he goes, ah, this little scream that he gives is just priceless.
So cute.
So cute. Look,
doesn't throw a lot of volume. Neither does Yudong. Yudong's in better form. I don't give a fuck about this fight. You making pick a guy? I lean towards Piotr Jan. I do think he's probably a little bit cleaner on the feet and throws a little more volume. But honestly, this is a great, great card. This is the fight to go make your sandwich.
No. Listen, I think you're taking it too far. I don't think this fight is going to score well on DraftKings. But I'm not making a sandwich. Like Caitlin Chukwugian's on the card. Go make your sandwich. Go take a dump for that one.
I can't make a sandwich when the Vaseline is next to me. I mean, that's just unsanitary.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not watching. Wait, are we going to Sun Tzu's house now? What are you talking about? Listen, I'm not making a sandwich. I'm looking forward to watching this fight. I like Piotr to get the win, but exactly what you said. I don't think he's going to score that well. I think he will get a takedown along the way. I'm predicting a takedown for Piotr, but just one. Not enough to score well.
Because he's bored?
But enough to steal a round and win the split decision 2-1. You know, this is the kind of fight where if DraftKings has that thing where you get like a plus 3.5 on one of the fighters, like you probably want to take that. Like I don't see one guy winning all three rounds. I think it's going to be back and forth. They're both really, really good. They're both Piotr. I haven't seen any decline in his game. The only thing is that it sucks, but fuck, man, you fought Aljo twice. You fought O'Malley. You fought Marab. Who are those guys? All champion level fighter. I'm not sure who the best is of that trio. You know, put Marab in against O'Malley. I think Marab probably wins. Like, I don't know. But those three guys are the best three in the division. And I think Piotr Jan is probably fourth or fifth, right there with Song Yadong. So not going to score well, probably. And that's all that matters. We're breaking down DraftKings plays here. And this one, as middling priced as it is, probably not a very good one. Unless something crazy happens and somebody gets knocked the fuck out. All right. Everybody's favorite fighter, Jack Della Madonna. We all love JDM.
No, we don't.
Everybody loves JDM.
No.
Everybody. Everybody. He's taking on Gilbert Burns. Burns plus 150. Della Madonna minus 175. Fight ends inside the distance, minus 200, not bad. So, you know, you've got the sort of Brazilian can't get a takedown, but when I do, I'm nasty with it. In Burns taking on Jack Della Madonna, who is one of the nastier boxers in the UFC. Monk, how do you see it happen? How do you see this one going down?
Yeah, I really like this fight, but not for DraftKings, to be quite honest. Maddalena obviously became a lot of people, except for, you know, everyone except for Sniper's favorite fighter.
Everyone except for Sniper.
Because he scores well, I mean, 100.
You guys don't even read our chat. You have to know what's coming. That's why I'm saying this.
100 points in each one. I mean, Ameev, Roberts, Brown, well over 100. But that was Ameev, Roberts, and Brown. He then fought, faced his first adversity, surprisingly to most, not all, but most, against Basil Hafez, in which he won a decision. Super greasy, 83 points. Then he goes to decision against Kevin Holland, 72 points. So we're either scoring up here or we're scoring, you know, under the floor. Meanwhile, Gilbert Burns is out here looking decent against good competition. Of course, it's Gilbert freaking Burns. He's fighting the best of the best. He has had, if I could talk, he has been having trouble with grapplers recently, Bilal Muhammad, Khamzat Chimaev, but the three guys he's beaten his last five, strikers, Stephen Thompson, Neil Magny, and aging Jorge Masvidal. So he's looked decent against that style, at least lately, which does give me pause for Jack Della Maddalena. I'll wrap it up here. I personally think this is going to decision. I love the over 10.5 on Prize Picks for this fight. But yeah, I think it goes to decision. Burns is super, super durable. Maddalena appears to be durable as well, makes good, even if he gets himself in bad positions, he makes good decisions once he's there to get out of it. So I think this goes to decision with the winner scoring, you know, again, 70 to 80 points. And I am going to be kind of low on this one as far as GPPs goes. Cash, it's kind of hard to pick, man. I lean Maddalena, but I'll probably avoid a lot of this one in cash too. So I might not have a ton of this fight, though I will be watching it because I love it.
JDM only 8,600, Monk. That is not that expensive for a guy who throws at a 7 strike per minute.
Yeah, but he was 8,300 last time and he didn't even come close to paying off a salary.
Correct. There it is. What do you think, Sniper?
I think that, yeah, we all fell in love with JDM. He finished Pete Rodriguez, Ramazan Ameev, who lost to Danny Roberts, by the way, before you see Ameev, and beat Randy Brown. Randy Brown is his best finish, and the Kevin Holland fight was a close split decision. JDM, and we saw a giant, massive, huge fucking hole in his game against Basil Hafez. Just did. You go to the ground, like, Gilbert Burns would have finished him 6 times in that fight, would have Von Flued him twice. Like, JDM was doing that thing where you hold on to the guillotine way too fucking long. Don't make a face, Monk. He did it every time. Every time they went to the ground.
Oh, the guillotine, yeah. The guillotine's a terrible mistake, but I don't know if he would have got subbed.
I think JDM's got huge, huge, huge holes on the ground. If this fight hits the ground, Gilbert Burns subs him. What this comes down to me is, has Jack Della Maddalena improved his takedown defense enough? Or his grappling game, because Burns might just hold up against the cage for a little while too, and there might not be straight takedowns. Burns is a high level guy. What I've seen from Della Maddalena getting split decision wins against Hafez and Holland, I think we have I quickly see a ceiling for him that we didn't see 2 fights ago. Could he improve because of his age? Absolutely. Is Gilbert Burns an aging fighter? The wheels could fall off. Sure. Have we seen Gilbert Burns get knocked down twice against Chimaev? Not finished, by the way, but knocked down. Sure. saw him knocked down against the Usman fight's weird training partner. I actually don't take a lot from that Usman fight. I almost throw it out with some of the backstory behind that one, but sure, he can be hurt. He can be knocked down. It's, to me, there's too big of a hole in Della Maddalena's game that I need to, for me, he's got to, against Gilbert Burns, prove it. Straight up prove it. If you were in there against a grappler, like who's a 170 grappler, even, I can't say Sean Brady. Sean Brady's really fucking good. Some, you know, a borderline, like Hafez pushed you. Hafez is in a top 15 guy. Gilbert Burns is legit. I'm taking Gilbert Burns. I'm on the Burns side here until JDM proves me wrong. I'm not saying full fade JDM, because if he wins, it's because he got to the Gilbert chin and Gilbert got a put down. Or Gilbert got put down, and JDM will score big if he wins. I like this fight because to me, it reads binary outcome. It reads JDM knockout or Burns. Any Burns win is good enough at this price. So give me Gilbert Burns until Della Maddalena proves me wrong. That's a kill shot. I know I went a little while longer than usual, but plug the hole. Show me, bro. Show me.
You know, you wish that, Burns's team
5 years younger
watching. Well, that too, but was watching tape and understanding like, hey, buddy, it's going to be hard to stand and strike with this guy. You might want to go for a takedown. He's not the best grappler. But, you know, he took down Masvidal 4 times. Like, in that one fight against Jorge, he made a conscious effort. He's like, I am going to get takedowns, and he did it. So I think if he comes in with that mindset, yeah, that takedown and submission is a live potential outcome. You know, JDM, Australian fighter, you know, they don't have that much grappling going on in Australia. I mean, they do, but not really.
Unless they're, you know, against kangaroos in the outback, I don't think there's much going on.
Yeah, I mean, no, if you're fighting, I mean, if you're training with Volk, those guys train grappling. There's a lot of wrestling in that camp. But in general, yeah, I understand why a lot of people like Burns here. And, you know, I think he's live. He's a stud. Burns was competing for championships like within the last 12 months. It wasn't that long ago, at least, that he was in the conversation for a championship fight. How long ago was that? Wait a minute. Where's the Usman fight? There it is. Yeah, 2021. So he was competing for championships within the last, you know, couple of years. Yeah, I think he's got a shot. I like exposure quite a bit to both sides of this fight. All right, coming up on a fight that a lot of people are super excited about. Kevin Holland taking on Michael Page. Michael Page, kind of a mirror image type fighter compared to Kevin Holland. Striker, he is coming in at plus 112, Holland minus 130. Fight goes the distance, minus 135. High likelihood of a decision here, 50-50 or greater. I want to just pull up some stats on Kevin Holland. You know, Holland has takedowns in his repertoire. He doesn't use it a whole lot. Michael Page got some takedowns in his repertoire. How do you see this going down?
Asking me, because they're just going to strike. This is a striking match. Kevin Holland should shoot takedowns, but he's big dum-dum. Granted, he's super fun, and I like him a lot. I've been a Kevin Holland fan, and Vince fucking hates Kevin Holland. It's funny. I don't know where all that hate came from. I just... Might have even slept with him.
I know where it came from. The first fight when Holland just was like hanging out, talking, you know, not trying, you know, talking to Dana while he's on his back.
While Thiago Maheta Santos was fucking on top of him on short notice, up a weight class?
It was something to do with the way he seemed to be enjoying it.
They're all fucking crazy. They're all.
I hate watching shit. People have fun. I hate it. Makes me so mad when people have fun.
I've always liked Kevin Holland. I think he's fun. I think he's a good fighter, too. It's just the fight IQ sometimes goes down, but make money, do you? Sure. He should win this fight. I don't think he's gonna. I think the UFC knows exactly what they're doing here, setting up Michael. And I've seen a lot of people say this, so I cannot take credit for this thought, but I agree with it. The UFC, and I said it earlier in other spots, the UFC spent a lot of money on getting Michael Venom Page over here. You think they're going to put them in, like they know what they're doing. It's going to be a fun fight. Potential fight of the night contender. I think these two guys will stand and throw and strike and be fun. I think Michael Venom Page wins. I think he wins a decision. I even think he could finish him because this is stylistically very close to the Stephen Thompson fight. And we saw what happened there. But Michael Venom Page puts people sleep. He puts his knees through people's face. Good to see him in the UFC. If Holland shoots takedowns, don't be surprised because it means he said, fuck you, Dana. I want to win this fight. But if he tries to make it fun, Venom Page wins. I think Venom Page is one of the better dog plays on the card.
Interesting. Monk, how do you think this one's going down?
Yeah, I agree completely. Striker versus striker. We got no stats for Page, so I can't, you know, really spit anything about too much of that. But Kevin Holland's numbers are just like pedestrian. He gives up kind of a lot of points, almost 99 points per loss. So that's my only thing here between that and his awful, awful fight IQ. All this dude has to do is come down here, land a couple takedowns, and get a submission on Page. And that is not going to happen because he's just not going to do it. I don't understand why, but that's the reason you can't bet on Kevin Holland, you know, really at all, because you just never know what he's going to do in there. He never seems to do what he should. Stephen Thompson, he had the dude on the ground and he's like, nah, stand up. Yeah. Why don't you let one of the most prolific strikers in the division of all time just stand back up after you've got him beat down? I don't get it at all, man. And I think that is a good comp that Sniper just said to this fight, to the Wonder Boy fight. I think Michael Page, somebody said in chat, he's not a good DK play. That's exactly why I am going to play him. I don't think a lot of people are going to play him because, you know, if they even watched Bellator and are just parroting everything they've heard everybody else say all week about how he's a slow striker or he's a low volume striker and kickboxer. That's basically all these people know about him because they don't actually watch the fights. But I think there's a chance that Holland makes mistake after mistake in there, and he can absolutely get finished. That said, so I'll be over on Page a little bit as far as GPPs. That said, as my boy Lou Betya likes to say, the Kevin Holland Darce at, what did he say, plus 5,000, or I don't even know what the odds were, is always in play, because if some crazy scramble happens, Kevin Holland can absolutely wrap this dude up and sub him. I just don't think it's going to happen because of his fight IQ and how he just never does what he should do. So give me Page in what should be a very exciting fight.
Yeah, there it is. You know, another mid-salary fight, by the way. A lot of these fights in the mid-range, there's so many of them in the mid-range. Isn't it funny? We came off last week's card, by the way. I didn't even go back to talk about the fact that there were no mid-range fights. And so you kind of had this crazy setup. And of course, you know, we talked about it last week. It looked like all losers, 7,300 and below. And of course, Ayman came in and blew that up. But looked like it was going that way up until that one fight.
See, and just like I got to give our boy Daniel Levy a shout out for best fight picks, because the best tweet, and I forgot about it, was the MMA god did not smile upon Bosch right after kicking Victor Henry's nuts through the roof and saying he quit. I had forgotten totally about that. And you know what? Karma's a bitch, because that was the best point I heard all week after that.
There it is. Last week's card. Sniper, I saw you in nuts position with the wrong main event fighter. It's like you didn't read my note in the chat that said loading up on Yarzino here for multiple reasons. But one of which is because how silly it was that everybody, like how highly owned Shamil Gaziev was going to be.
Weren't you on Gaziev?
No, I picked Yair, and I went Rosenstreich, and I was very heavy. I think I had 70% exposure.
Doesn't sound right.
On the breakdown, you guys were both on Shamil, and I was like, all right, well, I like Yair. But
was also trying to give Eamon's a hobby as my kill shot before you guys were like laughed me out of the room. So
oh, I wish you would have given it. No laughs. That would have been a good
one. He searched his own name after the fight because I made some tweet about how he was coming out to Bone and Tupac. He's not, you know, Boshrot's in trouble. He liked it. He also made like tons of crying emojis against everyone that picked against him. It's real. I love to see when fighters do that.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I did see you got the like from.
Yeah, I got the like.
Yeah, that was pretty. You love that. I got a like once from
and I didn't tag him. Of course, I'm a professional. I don't tag fighters like some jabron. So he's out there searching his own name. After a win, I love it. I love
you. I tag fighters when I like them up because I'm not afraid. Every time I tell Chris Curtis he's a pussy, I tag him.
Well, there are exceptions to be made.
No. If you're saying something nice, you tag them. If you're being a dick, you don't have to tag them.
No, Chris Curtis can suck my ass.
Oh, I feel that way about Bilal. Fuck that guy. All right.
By the way, I totally know you'll kill me because I'm sure he's watching this. He watches everything. He's a crazy, crazy man. He'll kill me.
Curtis?
Oh, yeah. Chris Curtis is out of his mind.
Oh, all right.
He Googles himself 6 times a day.
Oh, well, listen. I don't know. All right. Let's move on. I don't even know what to do with this.
While Sean Strickland is doing him in the butt.
Dustin Poirier taking on Benoit St. Denis.
Just call him Poirier. Could you say the legend's name?
Jack
right?
Della Madonna, Dustin Come Poirier. We got Chael Sonnen over
Dustin
here.
You gotta say Dustin Poirier correctly.
No,
you gotta give Dustin his due.
Jeez. I'm not gonna use Benoit the French Saint pronunciation. Dennis against Dustin We're in America. We're in America. Saint Louisiana. This is America.
Damn Cajuns! Go watch the
all right. This isn't Tom Montreal. Sports. This isn't New Orleans. We're in America.
I forgot what we're talking about. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Meanwhile, Benoit Saint-Denis, I could do the full.
There we go.
For him. Yes. All right. So, anyway, the legend taking on BSD. BSD sporting a giant staph infection on his forehead. No one cares. We're all ignoring it. It's fine. Everything's fine. 5-round fight, all in situation, people. So we're getting 5 rounds of non-stop action. This is a 100% between the now. I know Sniper's gonna shit on O'Malley for all in, but I'm gonna tell you guys right now, you got Jan Kutalaba on this card, you've got Poirier Saint Denis, all in fight, 5 rounds, and you've got the main event. 3 of your spots on DraftKings are pretty much already written. Then you got Despaigne or whatever the hell the crazy Taekwondo heavyweight first round finisher is. Can't remember his name. So that's 4 out of your 6 spots already basically done. It's not that many decisions. Meanwhile, Monk, I was a little surprised when I first opened up the odds and saw that Benoit, or as we say in America, Benoit, was the favorite. But then I was like, all right, you know, Dustin, you know, on the downswing, had his run as a champion. Is it all over now? He lost to Justin Gaethje. Does that mean he's bad? I don't know. I don't know. I hate to pick fights based on like, you know, false thoughts of fighters being finished or trying to, you know, understand what their motivations are. I feel like it's a bunch of shit, but I will say this, peak Dustin is the favorite in this fight. So do with that what you will. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dustin short outside of the past, what, 2-3 fights? Yeah. 3 fights basically before he lost to, Charlie Olives. He was at the top of the division, 2 wins over the most popular fighter in MMA of all time. Several wins over other former champions. I mean, the top of the top, the guys, but he's not there anymore. But that's why playing DraftKings is so much better, because not better, but different, because we can play the potential or the upside that Poirier still could have. I mean, both of these guys score outrageously well when they win. I mean, in 5-round fights, actually, in his career, Dustin Poirier scores an average of 105.36 per win. In 5-round light heavyweight fights, that goes up 5 whole points, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in DraftKings, it definitely is, to 110 per win. It's just absolutely outrageous what this guy's been able to do when he gets those wins. That said, Benoit Saint Denis, I mean, the dude is the best scorer on the card. He is Merab level of points per minute at 6.22. 5 points a minute inside the distance and 5 points a minute at distance, 6.2 inside the distance. That is almost unheard of. Average, every win over 100 points, 36% takedown defense at 4.5 per minute, controls 86% of the grappling time he's involved in. I love the guy. It does worry me a bit that he's got that staff on his head, but I mean, what, who is it? Ricky Tercios came in with leprosy on his chest 2 weeks ago and nobody said shit about that. In fact, Raul Rosas Jr. was the one to pull out. So I don't know what that really says. It is supposed to zap your cardio. So we'll see what he looks like when it comes to weigh-ins tomorrow, but I love this fight. I'm picking Benoit Saint-Denis. I love him for DraftKings. I will have some of Poirier, but man, did you see the face-offs today? Did you see how much bigger BSD was than Dustin Poirier? I don't know. I'm on the Saint-Denis side here, pretty big.
This is an all-in fight for DraftKings. This is the five-rounder to go fucking ham on. It's one of the reasons why you don't have to go ham on. You should not be going all in on the main event. We'll talk about everybody's volume in a second and all that shit. But we have another five rounder. You got tons of mid-range fights to target. BDS throws crazy volume. I'm on the BDS side too. I do think we're in the back half of Dustin's career. Unfortunately, get the head kick knockout. I think, you know, Father Time, he's talking. I've said it time and time again. When you start talking about leaving, it's hard to start winning fights. Not that Dustin can't do it. I do think the way this fight plays out and why it's so good for DK is Benoit wins with a quick finish. Totally viable. Probably it's what I'm picking to happen. Poirier wins later, volume, takeover. Benoit slows down, pieces him up at a 7,300 over five rounds. He'll get there too. I don't see how the winner of this fight doesn't get there. I'm on the Benoit side for the reasons I mentioned earlier, but this is the one of the couple to really load up on. So give me Poirier. Give me Benoit, but Poirier is my outside of my kill shot, Gilbert, the dog I'll have the most exposure to on the card.
Before we get to the main event, we all agree on this fight. First of all, every single ticket that you print for this card on DraftKings should definitely have one of these two guys in it. I also favor Saint-Denis, but I think Poirier is live, right? I wanted to show on screen what happens, why you can't go all in on the main event, or effectively why it's going to be difficult. If you go back to the fights that we just talked about that are pretty locked into the best fights on the card, and, you know, with give or take a little bit, if you're playing Benoit, you're playing Jan, you put in Rebellis, and one of Blades or Jailton, you know, effectively you have to choose between Rebellis and O'Malley. There's no putting them both in there, as you only have 6,200 left, and the math don't work.
And Asu. Asu's up there too, is a good pivot.
Or potentially is a pivot. So these guys on the expensive side, and I'm not going to include Benoit there. I think you want him in your lineup, which means of these favorites that are expensive, really can only pick one of the over 9K guys. The minute you get a second one in there, you're now, unless this is a Dustin lineup or, you know, something else like that, or a Vera lineup, which I'm not in love with, but hey, you never know what could happen. So the math doesn't work out that you can force 100% of this main event is what I wanted to get to there. But we get the rematch. Sean O'Malley, Chito Vera. O'Malley minus 260 in this one. Five rounds of action. Vera plus 220. Fight goes the distance, solid for a five-round fight, minus 130. That really puts Vera in, like, best underdog on the card territory for me. He can win, but even if he doesn't win, there's probably a lot of striking going to happen and a lot of scoring regardless. And if he gets the win, it's pretty lock button in the nuts. So, Monk, I don't know. How do you see this one going down? Do you have a pick? And do you think O'Malley, if you're picking him, is a must play?
Oh, I've got a pick. He's on my hoodie right here. Chito Vera. That's what we're going with today.
Oh, there it is.
He's a fantastic underdog play for sure. 7K. I can get a guy that's 4-1, has only lost to Corey Sandhagen, and has beat Sean O'Malley in the past, no matter what the fuck Sean O'Malley says. Yeah, I'm going to take that 100% of the time. I don't know if people think Vera's like 37 years old or something, but Sean O'Malley's not even 2 years younger than Chito Vera. He just has a million fights. because he's that good. He's that durable, and he's never, ever, ever, ever been finished. Sean O'Malley obviously was a fantastic DraftKings play beginning of his career, all the way up through the Paiva fight. Then he starts fighting better competition, and what happens to his points? They literally get cut in half in the Petr Yan fight. Say what you want about whether he should have won or not. He ended up with the win, scored 65 points, scored 90 against Sterling with a second round finish. He got 70 bonus points in that fight and ended up with 90 points. And now we're supposed to pay $2,000 over what he was against Aljamain Sterling. I just don't like that at all. I think this fight gets extended. I don't think Sean O'Malley is going to be finishing Vera, especially not early. Hopefully I'm not wrong about that, because I will shed a tear. Cause I'm a big, Cheeto guy, obviously, but I mean, I don't dislike Sean O'Malley, but 9,200, I'd rather play almost every other 9K fighter, on the card, over Sean O'Malley. I just think this one's going to decision, and man, how karmic would it be, if that's even a word, for Vera for this to go to decision, and Bruce Buffer says, you know, such and such scores the fight, you know, it's going to split. Oh man, if this goes to split, I can't freaking wait. So long story short, I don't think O'Malley pays off his salary. I don't think he scores very well in a win. And Cheeto could be a freaking deal at 7K. So yeah, you can play all in on the main event. You can get the main event in that very lineup and still have something. You just had the wrong fighter in there. You slot Cheeto in there. The world is your oyster at that point.
I mean, it's fair point. The way the math works out, it is tougher to pay all the way up for O'Malley. And with Poirier Saint-Denis, also five rounds cheaper, and some other mid fights that really stand out. Sniper, what do you say here?
The volume for both of these guys is a real problem for scoring. Neither one of these guys throws volume. Cheeto Vera...
Sean O'Malley throws volume at times.
O'Malley a little bit, but can Cheeto Vera start a fight before the second and a half round, please? Because it's starting to make me fucking crazy. Monk, your boy, don't roll your... He's not starting fights. He was in the corner of his last fight going, I'm doing it again. I'm starting slow, aren't I? Coach like, yeah, you fucking idiot. Throw.
Yeah, no, because that's how he fights. And every single other person this week has said those exact words, which is why I'm shaking my head.
Yeah, it's
he's 4-1 in his last five.
Fine. And he's got five rounds here, so it's not as big of a deal. Can give you that. Five rounds, not, but it's crazy that he keeps doing it over and over again. Anyway, volume on both sides is going to be a problem. I do think, though, recently, since the Vera fight, I can't side against O'Malley. He's looked better. He looks to improve. The Vera leg kick weapon is there. It is absolutely there. He seems to be throwing less of them, but you would think he's going to watch tape and go, I'm going to throw leg kicks. I can't count on these guys to do anything that I think they're going to do at this point, but the weapon is there. This is not an all-in main event, not enough volume. I think Sean O'Malley has improved enough. I think he's going to know, hey, if I don't check leg kicks or not defensively responsible here, I'm going to have a fucking problem. And I think Sean O'Malley gets a point. I don't think if he finishes Cheeto, I'll be really impressed, because Cheeto's a tough motherfucker. I do not think he's going to finish him. I don't think he scores well enough for this price. And I think it's going to be one of those big old duds everyone's sitting and staring at. And while I'm picking O'Malley, point per dollar, I probably think Vera's a better play. Making me fit one of these guys in my cash game lineup, it's definitely Vera. Like
Vera's
sure.
Vera's in your cash lineup this week. So I mean, like,
I have to pick O'Malley. He's just looked too good recently. The win against Aljo was, like I've been saying forever, Aljo is severely underrated. I can't give O'Malley his love for destroying him. Cannot do it. So I'm on the O'Malley side.
And that's the thing that worries me too, man. He's looked so good in these past three fights, and him and Tim always seem to have a very good game plan. And we've talked about shitty fighter IQ. Sean O'Malley's a guy that listens and sticks to a game plan. So that is very worrisome for me.
The weed has him hyper-focused. He's locked in.
True.
He knows.
Yep. Yeah, I'm less off of O'Malley as a playable guy, as a favorite, too. I think he's exactly what you said. He's looked amazing. He gets knockdowns. He looks stronger in his last few fights, and you know, not that skinny, just rail that he was early in his career. The win over Aljo blew my mind. I thought Aljo was going to win that fight. So, you know, when that happens, I'm like, oh, my head's all fucked up now. But, you know, as I pointed out before, when you're playing Sean O'Malley, you're not playing, you know, a guy who could just probably going to get a finish in the first 30 seconds or could. You're not playing a guy, some other names that, you know, could put up some massive scores. So you are, there's a bigger opportunity cost for O'Malley than there is for playing Marlon Vera. And Vera's probably going to score pretty okay. Even if he loses, you're probably looking at like a 35 point loss, maybe a 40 pointer. So that's not that bad for cheap. So he's going to be the one that you want in cash. And I'll probably have a little more exposure to him just because of the way the math works out on a card like this. If Vera wins, he is lock button nuts. So if you assume that the line is correct and he is a, let's say a plus 200 type fighter, you know, that's still about it's 30% chance of a win. And that's 30% of the time that he wins and is in the nuts lineup, in the winning lineup on this card. So, you know, those are all factors for consideration in this one. I'm going to address a question from the chat while we start to talk about our kill shots, which are going to be our underdog picks to win that we'd like to go a little heavier on. How do you help somebody with this one? Leans Jan. I mean, if there was ever a fight that somebody's pulling out, you know, I think we've seen Jan do this before, and he has fucked me when I've played 90. I've done this before with Jan and had problems. And the answer is, help convince me? No. I have no interest in convincing you of that. There is a chance that that motherfucker will pull out of a fight. Both of those dudes don't seem that reliable.
Just like you said, there's nothing you could do about it. Just
yeah. And late swap is certainly not the answer. So it's just one of those things.
No, I will fight you on this. DK did not give late swap a real chance.
Well, they didn't do it
every single week.
They didn't do it.
No, properly. It was terrible for MMA. It was so not. Didn't do
it, nothing they was locked at the right swap time.
Wrong. They had nothing, fight yeah, that was, wrong.
It's real simple.
The strategy, if you allow late swapping, the amount of strategizing that people can do is more than what I want to put in.
Yeah, I want to watch the fights. I don't want to stare at a simulator for hours and hours.
You cannot late swap. Keep it out of fucking DK MMA. I have been burned more than anybody. Trust me, because I go 100%. It's like I'm 100% on these fucking pullouts almost every time. And no one's been fucked more than me.
And they don't tell us. You saw what happened in the Raul Rosas fight. They said, oh, he's out right before the fight was supposed to happen. And why? Because he's been sick all day. Well, if he's been sick all day, how come this is the first time I'm hearing about it? So they're not helping us. It's just one of those things we got to roll with. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully it doesn't happen week to week to week. A couple times a year sucks, but it is what it is.
Those situations absolutely suck, Sam Pierce. There's no doubt. Yep. And what are you going to do? Yep. That's my response. All right. Kill shots, boys. Underdog pick, and for you guys watching as well, give us your kill shot. Who's the underdog you're taking a stand on in this card? Who's going to deliver the glory for cheap? Monk, who you got?
Well, I'm noticing the odds here. Okay, he is still in. I guess the line's moved, in my favor here. I picked Michael Venom Page this week, to be honest. It would have been Chito Vera, but obviously that's a main event. We don't pick main event dogs. So I'm going to go with MVP Michael Venom Page at 77. Yeah, he is a bit pricey for a kill shot. That's a little more than I would usually pay. Actually, that's the high end of our competition, so that's pretty fine. But yeah, as far as underdogs, man, I like Almeida. He's too expensive. I like Song Yadong. He's too expensive. So give me MVP.
There it is. How about you, Sniper? Where are you going with your kill shot?
Dorino. I've said it a bunch of times. Gilbert Burns.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like that one, too. I think it's a good pick. I'm going to go Munoz to get the win.
I like that, too. The three solid. I think those are the three most non-event, most solid non-event ones that you could give.
And of course, yes, we did qualify this with the fact that Vera is not eligible. And I would say Dustin is not eligible in a five round either. So, you know, both those guys should do just fine, should score just fine. But there we go, guys. That's going to do it for the breakdown UFC 299. We've got some big cards coming up after this, but this card itself is fucking spectacular. Let's enjoy it. Let's attack this thing. Let's put DFS Army helmets at the top of the leaderboards. We appreciate you guys watching. Hit the like button. Subscribe to the channel. Sniper's in here dropping Prize Picks plays every day. Hold on a second. Let me show you something. Sniper dropping Prize Picks plays in the YouTube channel. And you're like, well, I don't want to listen to him. Who the fuck is Sniper? Well, I'm going to show you something here.
It's fucking me, assholes. You should know who it is. You're listening to me for an hour and a half. You better know who it is.
An hour and a half. But what I'm saying is, if I can, if my computer would work, it would show you that we track all of the picks. We're dropping picks in the DFS Army Discord channel for Prize Picks and Sleeper and all the pick 'em games all throughout the day. Everything is tracked. Everything is. So if you're already subscribed to DFS Army, you didn't know about this, you know, DM Sniper, be like, what's going on? What are you printing cash over here? And the answer is yes. We've been tracking these plays since September. Every single ticket tracked right here.
And you can't say we're not doing losers because you pulled it up and we're actually.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck is going on the last 2 weeks, last week, Sniper?
Nah, the last 3 days. It's actually, we got a little cold, but you know what? Look at the long run. The long run.
Oh, no, this isn't updated. Wait a minute. It's February 26th. We got to get, I don't know what I'm seeing.
I am a couple days behind. You pulled up at a bad time. There it is.
But nonetheless, all time up 15 grand since September. Just this year alone, 2 months, 28,000 entries, 33,000 wins. Last 30 days, up 2 grand. This is a $35 subscription.
That's a little less than 2 grand.
Yeah, that's real tracked results. Money. They're dropping these plays in the Discord off the DFS Army Proptimizer tool, which shows you all the plays for Sleeper and Prize Picks, and coming soon, some other ones like Underdog and I believe Better. So we got some other ones coming soon. More tools, more advice, more everything. Sign up at DFS Army. Get in there. Get on the Domination Station Optimizer. Let's attack this tournament. Hit the like button. Subscribe. We will see you guys next time. Deuces. Sniper.